So just before Jeff speaks, I want to give you a little insight into his background. So it's no coincidence that I was asked to do this introduction because Jeff is one of ours, meaning he is a Yale alumnus. And I was talking to him earlier this morning, and his innovative career actually started back as an undergraduate, or maybe even predates that. But when he was at Yale, he actually brought technology to the Yale campus, making it available to students, so helped to set up the computer rooms and printers and all that centralized technology that was necessary before students had computers in their room. So I will not give a date, but it predates some of us. And so his innovation was well recognized and well appreciated. So when he graduated, our then president, A. Bartlett Giamatti, some of you may recall he later became Commissioner of Baseball, gave Jeff the C3PO Award in honor of his great innovation and technology contribution to Yale. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Jeff has to say, and here he is.
So I have to start with a disclaimer for you guys. I started the day yesterday in New Hampshire. I gave a talk at the University of New Hampshire. Before I left, I called the airlines, weather, checked everything, and the big storm wasn't coming till last night. As soon as I got there, the storm hit, like 12 hours early. So this is what happened last night. I made a commitment to be here right now with you guys. I got in a car, so they canceled all the flights at Logan. So they said, you can get out of Manchester. So I went the other direction in a car through the snowstorm yesterday, got to Manchester, dropped off the rental car, went in and checked in. On the board, it said, flights on time. The second I walked up to the gate, it said, every single flight's canceled. We're closing the airport. So I went back to the rental car place. They were cleaning up to go home, got another rental car, started driving south. Every airport in New Hampshire was closed, and I hit Massachusetts. Every airport in Massachusetts was closed. This is driving through this blizzard. Watching accidents and cars spin out. Then I got to Connecticut. Hartford was closed. New Haven was closed. 6 hours later, I got to LaGuardia. There was one flight left, not to St. Louis, to Chicago. So I dropped off the rental car, went in. That flight was supposed to leave at 9 last night. As soon as I got to the gate, it changed to 12:30. So I sat there for 3.5 hours, got to O'Hare. Then there was a four-hour drive to here. I literally just showered, ate breakfast, and went here. So I made it. So I am going to do this today on no sleep. We'll just see how it goes. But at least my excuse is already preloaded here. We're not really going to talk about travel per se today. We're going to talk about innovation, both personally and professionally. What you can do as an individual and what you can do as a company. And there we go. Did that. It's working on there and not on here. Hang on one sec, because I could describe this picture, but that's not going to go so well. It's blue. There's a plane in the middle of this. There we go. So I have been around travel my entire life. My childhood dream was to see 50 countries before I die. I wrote that down as a kid. I used to spin my globe and close my eyes and pick a country and then go research it and make a list of countries in the order I was going to see them someday in my life. Travel has always been my fascination. I've been involved in it forever, all the way back from my first company. We actually invented and patented the check-in kiosk. When you go to an airport now and check in, that was actually an invention of ours. That was our first startup. My team helped build this company and launch online travel. Now it went too fast. Can you go back? I don't want to keep messing with this. All right, and this was our biggest company that I was part of. We launched this company as a startup. Priceline.com today sells travel in 200 countries and territories. So I've been around travel my whole life. Here's what we're here to talk about today, in innovation. I've always studied success. And I've always wondered, why do some people and some companies constantly achieve excellence? Like, I just came from an event that I spoke at recently where the other speaker was Richard Branson. Why did he create so many companies that worked, is the question. So I've been studying that for a long time with that question in yellow in mind. What are these people doing that everybody else isn't? And I'm going to share what I've learned traveling around the world and just meeting. I've been very blessed to meet a lot of people that were heroes to me in different fields. And the question was, how did they achieve whatever they achieved? And why are their companies or their lives or their careers or whatever, quote, successful? So that's what we're going to explore today about innovation. I wanted to share with you, you know what, it might be the battery. Do you have another one of these? Because I don't, this is, all right. I don't know why it's going so slow. I've been building startups my whole life. After launching companies, I've done about 8 startups throughout the years. Again, obviously Priceline.com being our biggest. After the end of that time, I made a commitment to giving back. And I made a commitment to giving back by really mentoring people. What I said was, entrepreneurship, that's my thing, right? I've been doing startups forever. And it turns out that entrepreneurship's not a job. It's an attitude, a mindset, a skill set. Right, entrepreneurs are people that go out and find problems and find ways to fix them and come up with ideas and innovate. That skill set of being an entrepreneur wound up being really helpful to me in achieving a lot of things I wanted to achieve. For example, starting a travel company so I could, in fact, go see 50 different countries in the world. That was all part of it. So I made this commitment to giving back. In 2011, I had my last startup. It was an internet company called Ubid.com. We sold that one. And I said in 2012, I'm going to take a year off to just mentor you guys, mentor anybody that's trying to build and grow a business or an organization. It doesn't have to be a startup. Just help people achieve whatever they dreamed of achieving. So I took that year off to go mentor, but it turned into a giant research project. I'll tell you guys very quickly. The real experiment was I did a social experiment for 2012. I just didn't tell anybody. For 2012, I said, I'm going to take the year to give back. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a year and I'm going to not say no to anybody that asks me to help them. So for 1 year, anyone that calls, I'll say, sure, I'll help you with that, which means I won't be in the office 1 day the whole year. I won't make a dime and I have no idea where I'm going to be tomorrow. And what happened was the second request I got was an email from a 19-year-old kid in Senegal in West Africa in a village. And the email started out by saying, Dear Mr. Hoffman, I know you won't read this. And if you do, I know you won't reply. And it was on as soon as I read that. I was like, wait a minute, that's not fair. So I took off and went to Senegal. And what happened was it got me started on something I've been doing the last 4.5 years. So instead of taking 1 year off, for the last 4.5 years, I've been traveling around the world trying to study innovation and dreams and how people are building things and how they're growing them and what tool sets they're learning. In fact, tomorrow I'm doing the same thing again in the little country of Slovenia. So I'm leaving you guys to go there. It's a learning process. The reason I'm sharing that with you is it's given me an opportunity to see how people innovate all over the world. And that's what I'm going to share with you today. It's a combination of things we did and we learned and a combination of things other people learned. I had the chance to study. All right, it's still not going. I guess you guys need to do this. I'll just tell you when. If you don't have you do not have another one of these, can someone nod either way? Because this isn't doing anything. Pardon? All right, well, go ahead and change the slide, meanwhile, since I can't from up here. All right, so I want to share with you just some of the people. Along the way, I've had friends who've been very innovative, and I've taken the chance, again, the things I'm going to show you aren't just my ideas. That's what I want to be fair. This is a whole bunch of other people's ideas. That's a friend of mine, Nolan. Nolan invented this little thing called the video game. Video games didn't exist. Nolan Bushnell created them. He started a company called Atari, which was invented video games worldwide. He hired these two guys, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, to build Atari for him. Everything he's done fascinates me. By the way, later when his kids were driving him crazy at home after he retired, he invented Chuck E. Cheese, the same guy. So this is a guy that solves problems. You can go to the next one. Okay, back up one, please. Back up one. Oh, thanks. That's Jack Welch. Jack is a guy that I've done management seminars with, but it was the same question. How do you build organizations? This is a guy that knows, who I had a chance to ask. You can go to the next one here. This one is Steve Wozniak from the other half of Apple. Woz and I just did a trip to England together. Same question. What are these people doing? Why are they creating such amazing companies, and what do we learn from them? So let's get into that. And let me talk about it. I have no idea if this button worked this time or you did that, but I'll take it. I want to start with this. Technology has dramatically changed everything. And sometimes we get, right, in our business in travel, we're a service business, and that's what drives it. The problem is some people use that as an excuse to not focus on technology. They say, look, we're in service, we're not in technology, I'm not really worried about that. But what I'm going to share with you is the fact that you don't have a choice anymore, right? Because it's not us, it's the customer. If our customer is used to consuming every other product and making every other purchasing decision using technology, then we can't expect not to. And let me show you some examples of some of that. This was a trip, so I recently gave a speech I gave a talk in Seoul, in Korea. And when I was going back to the hotel, I was going to this little store that I knew where it was underground, and it was a little convenience store. I was going to get a cold drink. And as I was walking to the store, when I got closer, I noticed this. That's not a store anymore. That's a 3D giant screen. And when I walked up to it, the store is gone, but all the shelves are there. And you see what that guy's doing with the phone? You could point your phone at a product. You can actually spin the product around, look at it. Then click on it and order it right then. You know what they do? You could pick up milk down at the bottom and check the date. Guess what else is interesting about this store? It's on the side of the subway train. So you know what they do in Korea? So your cold doesn't get warm or your warm doesn't get cold on the way home. On the way home, they walk up to that thing, they say click, 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 and when they get home, dinner is waiting for them fresh. That was a store yesterday. Now it's a 3D phone ordering thing. Things happen fast. The technology changes. Every night while we're asleep, something happens. Oop, I want to back up one. Something happens that you just unbelievable when you wake up. So let me check this out. If I were to ask you guys to name the world's most innovative companies, you would all say Google or Apple, right? You'd think of those companies. I'm pretty sure not one of you in this room would say Corning, the glass company, because they make cookware and they make glass tops. But you know what? They invited me to come visit. And let me tell you what they're doing. And the reason I'm explaining this to you guys is because technology is coming. What we tend to do is look at our, quote, competitors. You guys are sort of competitors in this room and sort of, you know, partners in a way. But you look at each other and you say, well, our program's as good as that school. And you're looking in the wrong place. Because the changes are going to come from places we never saw coming and people we never thought were our competition at all. So this is what they showed me. This is smart glass. These two women are window shopping. That woman sees a white coat in the store. When she touches the glass and it figures out she's pointing at the coat, a 3D image of the coat floats up to the window. You can see with her finger, she can spin the coat around and look at it. If she has already done a body scan, which a lot of people are doing for clothing, it would show what that jacket would look like literally on her. You know what's on the end of your finger when you touch a window? This is interesting, your fingerprint. So you know what it did? It said, oh, this is Jennifer. So you see what's down below? It went on social media to see if any of Jennifer's friends have ever bought this coat and how they rated it, right? It's checking with her friends to see if they think it would look good on her. It's checking to see if there's gloves that go with it that she bought last year that already match this coat so it can try to encourage her to buy the coat. Guys, this is the window, not the salesperson. Windows now have an IP address. They're addressable by the internet, can talk to the window. All right? Technology is changing everything we know, and we can't avoid it. What I'm going to do today is give you some tips for dealing with it. If you don't know this term, you probably do. You're going to hear AR everywhere. AR is augmented reality. What that is something, so if you sent me, let's say I was on a trip and I was in the Redwood Forest in California, right? And I have my device with me, any kind of iPad, whatever. Augmented reality is something that lets you say, what did the spot I'm standing on look like a million years ago? And then it shows you that. So anywhere you go, you would be able to hold up your device, point it at the Empire State Building and say, show me in slow motion the construction of the Empire State Building. And it's going to show it. Augmented reality superimposes things on what you're looking at and pulls it up based on where you are standing. Pretty soon, no traveler of yours is going to accept the fact that you haven't partnered with somebody for an augmented reality app to supplement the education if somebody else has. When I'm traveling, I want to hold my device up and ask it questions based on what I'm pointing it at. That's pretty amazing stuff right there. You've heard this term a lot, virtual reality. You know what we're going to be doing with virtual reality? We're going to get a chance to go to the place you're recommending before I ever leave. On my couch, if you're telling me go to Munich and go to Marienplatz, that's what that is, I'm going to be able to use my virtual reality, walk around there, look what it's showing based on whatever I look at. It's giving me information about everything there. So before you convince me to pay for a trip, I can actually walk around the plaza in virtual reality and say, wow, this really does look cool. I really do want to go here. And then I can hit a button and say, what does it look like in winter? And it will change that whole thing. Now I'm walking around Germany in winter and say, ah, maybe this isn't for me. Show me whatever. So you'll be supplementing whatever you're selling in a brochure or online with tools like VR tools so that people can actually go to the place without ever leaving their couch. Amazing stuff, this technology now. Not this technology, however. robots. We all know, I think it was CES, somewhere that I was giving a talk, I noticed people were looking behind me and I turned around and a robot was following me. And the robot said, excuse me, sir, could I get you something to drink? I literally thought it was somebody had a remote control and was saying the voice. It was actually a robot. I said, sure, how about a Diet Coke? And it said, one moment, please. And I watched it jog over to a fridge, open the fridge, look, get a Diet Coke, and bring it back to me. And I literally thought there has to be a little kid in there. Until they said, please do not touch the robot. That thing costs a lot of money. I was trying to break it open and see what was inside of it. Unbelievable technology. Less obvious to what we're doing now, but here's one. So I recently got asked to speak at Microsoft's annual conference. Microsoft has a new CEO, Satya Nadella, the guy that replaced Bill Gates. I said, what are you guys working on? He said, check this out. So write this one down. It's a technology called HoloLens that they showed me. HoloLens is real holographic technology that Microsoft is spending billions on. Are they your competitor? No. You're looking at each other. You know what? They're building tools that you're going to have to figure out how to use. So let me tell you what HoloLens does. This blows me away. It's literally, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. Only it's high quality, if you remember that hologram there. So check this out. Now, today you have to wear that kind of headgear. In the future, it'll be on your regular glasses or whatever. But let me tell you a couple of things about this hologram technology. See the soccer game, the TV? What do we do now during the Super Bowl or big game? We have to time when we run to the restroom because we don't want to miss the game. But in the future, the television set isn't real. It's holographic. So guess what? The TV set follows you around the house. When he walks into the kitchen, the TV set just goes. A 60-inch TV is following him. If you go sit down in the bathroom, the TV set goes. You'll never miss another play again. But guess what else it does? It's listening to his conversation. And when he says, we're thinking about going to Maui, guess what it did? It pulled up a 3D hologram of condos in Maui. It pulled up a weather report. It all appears in 3D. You reach out and feel like you could touch it. So when you're talking about travel, it's researching it and it's pulling it up in a 3D hologram right in front of you. I'll show you what this thing looks like in retail. In the retail biz, you'll be shopping for something. So this is HoloLens in action. You're designing or shopping for a motorcycle. Guess what? That motorcycle is going to appear on your desk in full 3D. You can spin it around, you can change the color, you can hear the engine roar. How is that going to work in travel? I'm going to be able to have the entire hotel suite that you're telling me to book appear in full 3D hologram, in full color, on my desk. You'll like feel like you can touch it, like a 3D movie. Companies are spending billions to build technology that we have to figure out. If we're not cognizant of this technology, our customers are going to say, you know what, this other company, they partnered, they use this stuff, I want to work with them. I'm going to give you some techniques for how to stay up on this technology in a minute here. Here's another amazing one that blew me away. This is another term to pay attention to that no one's heard yet. It's called proactive engagement. Let me tell you what that is. Everywhere you go, there's a few things that are true. Your phone knows where you are, right? Because your phone has GPS. Your phone has a sensor. That's one. Two, the other thing is there's sensors everywhere else, right? Everything that ever happens in the world seems to be caught on camera somewhere. And there's sensors everywhere. So this is a demo that I got from a travel company. Unfortunately, it was a confidentiality. I can't tell you who it is. But here's the thing. This was the demo of proactive engagement. I get to the airport. I am running to my gate. My phone, these are the AI, this is the artificial intelligence piece, okay, of virtual assistants like the Siri and those things, but to the next level. It says, my phone suddenly speaks up, and it says, whoa, whoa, slow down. This is a real demo, guys, that I already did. It says, whoa, whoa, slow down. My phone tells me this. It says, I can see that you're running. You're at gate 11. Your flight's at gate 13, and it doesn't board for 33 minutes. You don't have to run. And so I slow down, and the phone says, based on from the time you picked me up and rushed out of the house, I don't think you ate breakfast, okay? If you didn't, I know that you like that orange drink at Jamba Juice. There's one at gate 14. I just put a coupon on my screen for you to go to gate 14. You got 10 minutes to go get a juice. Why don't you go have some breakfast? This is my phone, okay? Guess what else it does? If I'm sitting there and my flight's canceled, my phone says, "This. I realize this was a day trip and you probably don't have clothes. I'm arranging, literally, I am arranging to have underwear shipped to you, okay, or whatever clothes it may be. Click here to accept." Proactive engagement is all this technology watching you. Big brother, yes, but it's already there, guys. And helping your trip go better by figuring out what you need when you need it. You can imagine one day those drones, right? You're going to be somewhere where you got stuck overnight, and your travel app is going to say, go outside. When you step outside, a thing's going to descend and drop you fresh clothing for tomorrow because you didn't have any luggage or your bag got lost. Unbelievable. So I just want you to pay attention to these terms because these are the things that are going to invade our industry. People not in our industry are spending a ton of money on them. Let me go back to that one. Wearable technology. That was one that Branson showed me. That they're equipping roving agents in the airport. So you have a person standing in the airport. She's wearing smart glasses. Virgin is working on this one. The smart glasses can do facial recognition. So I see her walking, I see her walking, I see him walking. Then I see him and I say, oh, it says Virgin customer. He's on Virgin Atlantic flight 1240. It leaves in 40 minutes. The guy takes his coffee black. He likes the Wall Street Journal. She sees all this while you're walking through the airport. She walks up and says, good morning, Mr. Johnson. We're so thrilled to have you here in the airport. You're almost at the gate. By the way, the flight attendant already knows how you like your coffee. We told them what paper to give you. I can walk you to the gate if you'd like. I mean, it's literally scanning customers, reading everything about them, and telling a customer service agent right then everything they need to know. So all this stuff is very overwhelming. I only gave you a sample of some of the stuff that I've been looking at. Stuff that will all impact the travel experience one day, coming from all these companies. So what I want to do now is I want to give you some tools and techniques for how you do this. You can't, and the message I'm delivering to you guys today is, you can't say, oh, that's all nerd stuff, that's all technology. Because it's not. When your customer sees it, they're going to say, when I travel with you, how come none of these things happen? So what you're going to have to do is study these technologies, partner with these companies, or learn how to use some of these tools yourself, right? Again, when somebody sees another a person traveling with one of those devices where they're showing how the dinosaurs roam in a 3D video in the space they're standing, they're going to say, where'd you get that? And they're going to say, our travel company provides these when you travel. They're preloaded with all the destinations I'm going to. What do you think that customer is going to do? Want to do business with somebody that doesn't provide any tools? No. So let's talk about what we have to do. And this is really important. People think of innovation as an accident. There was this famous IBM commercial that I love about innovation. This guy comes back from lunch. He goes in the office. He's walking down the hall. Everybody's missing. When he gets to the end of the hall, the conference room lights are off. So they're down low. So he goes in the conference room. All of his coworkers are laying on mats in a darkened conference room, like in kindergarten. He says, what are you guys doing? And the one lady says, we're innovating. And he says, how does that work? And she said, well, we just lay here and hope someone has a good idea, right? And he says, how will that make us more profitable? And there's a long pause, and she goes, yeah, we haven't innovated that yet. That's what most people think. But innovation is not an accident. It's not you were in the shower and a good idea came to you. So the reason I showed you at the beginning some of these people I've been working with is because I studied all of them and tried to figure out they're doing something everyone else isn't because they keep having good ideas. They are. And I'm going to show you a few of those. It's the way they think. It's the attitude and the practices that they do that cause them to continually lead. So let's talk about that. The first one I want to tell you about is just the way you view the world around you. And I'm going to tell you sort of something, a technique that I came up with that I'm going to tell you the day this sort of really hit me, learning this, about opening your mind. So if you don't know what that device is, it's a five-year-old. You either have one or you've been one. Let me tell you why I picked five-year-old. Five is the age where everything you say is why, right? You know, go outside, why? Put your shoes on, why? Everything you say is why. We're going to the store, why? You have to go to bed, why? Five-year-olds say why to everything. By the way, I noticed that there's only one way to end that, which is not the actual answer. It's if you say, because I'm your mother and I told you to. But because you know what? If you say, because I'm your father and I told you to, they say, I'll ask mom. So that's the only thing that works. So here's what happened this day. I had I did a TED Talk, and I'm going to give you the mini version of my TED Talk called The Power of Wonder. So I had a five-year-old for the day. But I realized before we were going to spend the day together, I left something that I needed in the office. So we had to go to the office. So I said to her, get your shoes on, we're going to the office. So we start walking to the garage. I said, we go get in the car. And as we're walking, she's shuffling her feet on the carpet. And the five-year-old says to me, how do they make carpet? And I said, I don't know, my company doesn't make carpet. Just like you guys sell travel, why do you care what HoloLens at Microsoft is? It's not in your world. I said, I don't know. And we kept walking, and she said, well, just tell me how they make it. I said, I don't know how they make carpet. My company doesn't make carpet. I don't make carpet. I have no reason to know that. And she said, well, how do you think they make carpet, right? And I was like, I don't know. And she looked at me with this look of disgust. And now it's like that, are you smarter than a fifth grader? But it's a five-year-old defeating me. So I said, fine. I remembered something in social studies. I said, there are these giant machines. They're called looms, and they go back and they forth and they weave. She said, you don't know how they make carpet. I said, get in the car, okay? So we go outside. We go into the garage. We go to the car. And she walks up to the car, and she taps on the window. And she says, how do they make glass? And I said, get in the car, okay? She said, just tell me how they make glass. And I said, I have no idea how they make glass. We don't make glass. I don't really care. And she said, didn't you go to a good college? I said, I didn't take glass at Yale. Okay? I don't know how they make it. And she said, well, but you're an adult. I said, they don't just teach you these things. And she said, you don't know how they make glass. Well, only thing I could come up with was eighth grade field trip to the glass blowing store. I said, there's like heat and ovens and flame, and they put sand in there. She started laughing. I'm arguing. I said, they really do. They melt. She's like, whatever. You don't know how they make glass. I said, get in the car. Now it's a five-year-old two, adult nothing. So before she gets in the car, she taps on that black plastic thing that's between the front and the back window, that strip. And she goes, what is this called? And I was like, get in the car already. And she said, what is this called? I said, it doesn't have a name. It's a piece of black plastic between the front and the back window. She said, well, what do they call it? I said, it doesn't have a name. It's just a plastic thing. And the five-year-old said this to me. She said, if it doesn't have a name, how do they order more of those on the assembly line? And I just stood there feeling like an idiot. By the way, I gave this talk in Detroit, and everyone in the audience knew the part number. It does have a name. It has a SKU number and a part number. Right? So we get to the office. And silence. I have not answered successfully one question. I have the five-year-old in the office. When we go in the office, she starts walking along. And when you come in our office, there's a table with two machines on it. She said, what are those and why do you have two of them? I don't know. I said, you keep shoving her towards the conference room. And she said, like, why is that girl on the phone all the time? Why are you printing that? What does that guy do? All these questions. I finally got her in the conference room with markers to draw. And I went back to my office, and I sat down exhausted. And I realized something. I was upset, but I was exasperated not because she asked me all those questions. I was exasperated because I don't know any of the answers. So I got up, and I went over. I called my office manager. I said, come here a minute. She said, what's up? I said, what are those two things in the lobby? There's two machines in the lobby on a table. She said, I don't know. They've been here since I started. I said, you don't know what they are? She said, no. I said, well, ask around. She came back and said, no one has any idea what those things are. I said, wait, they've been in the lobby every day. We walk past them. She said, no one knows what they are. So I called my CFO, and I said, do me a favor. And he said, what? And I said, could you figure this out? I can't even answer the five-year-old's question. No one in the office knows what those two machines are and why we have two of them. And he goes away. 30 minutes later, he comes back. He said, good news and bad news. And I said, what's the good news? He said, I figured out what those are. He said, they're collating machines. Because back before PowerPoint, back then, we used to print all of our own presentations and bind them. And I said, what's the bad news? And he said, yeah, dude, we're leasing those. I said, how much more? So I'm going to tell you guys what I did. I went and got all my employees, and I said, Friday is five-year-old day. And let me tell you why that is. You are so used to your surroundings, you don't see them anymore. Every one of us walks through the same office every day and doesn't see anything anymore. If you think about it, I wanted to prove this point. So one day, a friend of mine that asked me for a ride home, I said, well, I'll give you a ride, but I want you to drive my car and go by my house first. He said, why? I said, just an experiment. On the way home, I said, wait, when did they open the new Petco? He said, Jeff, Petco's been there 4 years. You know what? I drive the same route every day. I don't see anything, right? Because I drive past the same stuff. You don't notice it anymore. So we called five-year-old day. I told everyone in the office, I want you to come in, and I want you guys, some of you should try this. Either bring a five-year-old or call a five-year-old day. Have everyone in your office play the five-year-old game. Question everything you do. Question everything in your office. Question every procedure, every job. Just keep saying why. We did this at work. Everything we couldn't answer, we threw out. I had one person who was doing a particular job. He was delivering these reports to customers. I said, why do you print that report to send it to customers? Why do you send it to customers? We're doing the five-year-old thing. He said, this is the report they want. I called customers. I said, do you get this particular report from us monthly? He said, I do. And I said, why? He said, because you keep sending it. And I said, what do you do with it? He said, well, when it's warm, I prop my door open. And I said, so why are we sending that? So I went back and asked the guy, why do you keep doing that? He said, Jeff, one day you had a job posting. I interviewed for the job. You hired me. This was my job. He said, no one ever told me to stop. Every day I go through my office and I see this guy delivering reports. I never questioned, is it still valid? Does it make any sense? Why are we still doing that? So play the five-year-old game. Ask why to everything you do. We streamlined so many things, and there were things we stopped doing because we couldn't answer them, and the phone never rang. No customer ever called and said, wait, why did you stop doing that? You're doing stuff of sheer inertia that you don't even see anymore. So that's what I want you to do. Now let's talk about innovation. I'm going to give you another technique. And what I'm going to tell you is when you talk, I mentioned this already. Where does innovation come from? Where do new ideas come from? And they come from places that we never saw coming. I might have this example in here. If I do, I won't repeat it. But one of my favorite examples is the music industry failed to invent the iPod or the iTunes. Who should have invented the iPod? The music industry. They didn't, and they lost not only billions of dollars, but thousands of jobs because they failed to create electronic music. Apple did, and tech companies did, and killed the business. So the point is, innovation comes from places you never saw coming. So when I started to spend time with really innovative people, I noticed they're doing something everyone else isn't. They are processing a much broader view of the world than everyone else. Let me explain what that means. If your business, well, let's stick with this. Your business is travel. So if I came up to you and said, hey, I'm going to the banking industry conference next week. Do you want to go? You would say, Jeff, I'm in travel. I'm not going to go to the banking conference. If I were to give you a magazine called Retail Malls Illustrated, you would say, Jeff, what part of I'm in travel? I don't care how they run a mall. Okay? What do you spend all your time doing? Travel. That's your job. That's your industry. Therein lies the missed opportunity. So what I noticed about these people is they stop on a regular basis to see what the whole rest of the world is doing to see if they can apply that to travel. So here's a technique that I created that I want to share with you guys. The word doesn't mean anything. I just made it up, info sponging. So here's the concept of info sponging. I do this every morning. I actually did after I showered. I did this before I walked down here to join you guys. Every single day, if you can't do this 5 or 10 minutes a day, you can spend the whole rest of your day working on travel. But I want you to take 5 or 10 minutes of every day or do it once a week, and here's what you're going to do. You're going to pretend you don't work in travel. You don't work for your company, your university, or this industry. So for 5 minutes a day, you're going to do this. This is the challenge. I do this every day. I learn one new thing quickly every day. Here's the important thing. It's one thing you don't even know why you're learning. It's what new technology is the banking industry introducing? How does that apply to travel? I don't know. I'm going to give you an example in a minute. Your goal is to find things that other industries are doing that you can be the first person in the travel industry to adapt to those things. That's what these innovators do. So what do you look for? What I want you to do is follow your curiosity. By the way, I notice as an entrepreneur, a lot of times I tell people I follow my instincts. my gut instinct. And when you tell people, that's why I'm not telling you where to go look for something to learn. Whatever catches your curiosity, you know why? Because even though that sounds kind of soft, it's not. Your gut instinct, this is what I think. I think gut instinct needs a new marketing manager. Because you know why? When you say gut instinct, it sounds like you made a quick, rash, uneducated decision. The truth is, your gut instinct should be renamed your fast intelligence. You know why? Your gut instinct is the sum total of every mistake you've ever made in your life and everything you've ever done right. So when someone shows me something and I say, that doesn't look good to me, that is the sum total of every bad thing I've ever stumbled across, telling me, don't touch that, okay? Follow your curiosity. Pick one thing. Read something you don't need to know. I'm going to give you an example in a minute. When you're done, write down one sentence of what you learned. And I'm going to give you an example so this makes more sense. But here's what I want you to think of. I want you to think of knowledge. Every new thing you learn every day, think of it as a puzzle piece. And here's why. If I gave her a piece of a puzzle and said, what is this puzzle? She'd say, Jeff, you gave me one blue thing. How do I know what this is going to be? If I gave you two and then three pieces, she still doesn't know. But suppose I gave her a piece of that puzzle every single day. And every day she moved those puzzle pieces around. One day she would call me excitedly and said, I figured it out. This is going to be a castle in Ireland. This is what we do with knowledge. So let me give you an example of how info sponging works. So one day for my info sponging, up in the upper left there, I read a story called How to Sell Distressed Inventory. Remember, guys, I want you to go learn one new thing that is not in your industry, right? You don't even know why you're learning it. So this story was talking about the fact that distressed inventory, by the way, I didn't even know what distressed inventory was. I thought it was if you have two socks and they're different sizes or one sleeve's longer. It's not. The goods aren't damaged. It's just anything you couldn't sell in retail and it's left over and you need to get rid of it. So if I sell these things and I sell them for $30 and I have 100 and I sell 90 and the new model's coming in, I just need to get someone to give me $10 and take the rest of them. That's distressed inventory. But if I do that and my best customer finds out I gave somebody else the last a bunch of these for $10, I destroy my pricing. So what I wrote down, I read the story and I wrote down one sentence. I wrote down, selling distressed inventory requires a shielded pricing channel. Guys, I don't even know what a shielded pricing channel is, but it's a puzzle piece. I looked at it, shrugged, no idea what that meant. But when I went to bed that night, all these puzzle pieces, because I learn one each day, are swirling around in my head. And when I went to bed, I remembered an info sponge from another day. I remembered thinking, I saw a thing that said every day in the United States alone, 600,000 airplane seats fly around empty. While I was lying in bed, I was thinking, are empty airline seats distressed inventory? Did two puzzle pieces just snap together in my brain? Maybe they did. So went to bed. The next time, sometime later in the lower left, I read a story about perishable commodities. Guys, the story was about how to sell fruit. Why am I reading a story about how to sell fruit? I don't sell fruit. That's not our business. But you know what? I read it. It's your info sponge. Learn one new thing every day, every week, whatever you can do. So what it said was, it was about how to sell bananas. And it said that you only have a week to sell the banana. And it said that as the banana turns more brown, you have price decreasing and placement urgency. What the story said was, brown bananas have to move in front of yellow bananas, which are in front of green bananas. And the more brown they turn, the lower the price is, because by Friday you have to throw them out and you can't sell them. That's what I wrote down. So I wrote down that there's this decreasing price urgency of perishable commodities. Guys, I had no idea what that meant. But when I went to bed that night, the puzzle pieces are swirling around. And I remember thinking this, what's more perishable than a banana? Guess what? Maybe an airplane seat, maybe a hotel room. At midnight, when the clock strikes midnight, an unsold hotel room is spoiled. It actually hits negative on the balance because empty hotel rooms pay rent and heat and cleaning. And an empty airplane seat, a banana lasts all week, but when you close the door to the airplane, all the goods are spoiled. You can't sell them anymore. So you can already see where this is leading. One time it was dynamic pricing I was reading about. I read I don't know what airline yield management is, so I read that story one day. So you can already see, one day we were literally, you can switch to that. We were literally sitting at a table pushing these puzzle pieces around, and what did we come up with? We invented a dynamically priced, distressed inventory, perishable commodity distribution system that the travel industry had never seen before. We created Priceline.com out of a set of concepts that had nothing to do with travel. Reverse auctions, harvesting consumer demand, distressed inventory. This is a company today, I told you it does business in 200 countries now that it sells travel. In fact, it's the world's largest seller of online travel. Priceline today, and again, guys, I'm not a money person at all. I'm just illustrating how innovation works. This company is worth $78 billion today. We started it on a table with a little group of people because we studied what the rest of the world was doing and found a new way to apply a concept to our industry, to travel. By the way, I did an event not too long ago with some other internet founders. It was Obama's Entrepreneurship Summit that I spoke at, but some of the other founders were there, and two of them, Travis created Uber, and Brian created Airbnb. Guess what? We were talking about this. Travis did not create Uber by staring at taxis. He created Uber by applying concepts. It's a taxi company that owns no cars, really? Would you have come up with that idea studying taxi companies? No. And when Brian came up with Airbnb, did he come up with that studying traditional hotel companies? No. They don't even own a single room, yet he's one of the world's largest lodging companies. How is that possible? Because they applied techniques from other industries. So that's info sponging that I wanted to share with you guys. Spend some time every day to learn new things about what the rest of the world is doing and see if you can be the first person in our industry. I gave you a bunch of hints. I gave you HoloLens from Microsoft, proactive engagement. I gave you things outside of our industry. If your company is one of the first travel companies to figure out how to use those, you will be the leader. You will be the innovator. I want to tell you about another technique called blue sky sessions. And let me explain what these are. A blue sky session it's this. Literally, the task is we only do this once or twice a year. And the question is this. If I were to ask you, you have your business, you have your company, your department, your office, whatever. But if I were to ask you, if you could clean the slate and start your company over from scratch today with no budgets and no rules, what would you design? If you were starting your company, your business, your department over today, what would you build? Because you know why? If you had no budgets and no limits, you would build something that doesn't look like what you have today. For example, you would have built social media into it in the first place, not try to figure it out later. You would have used this new technology. So here's what we do in a blue sky session. We gather anybody that wants to come when we do these at work. And again, I'm encouraging you to try one of these sometime. In a blue sky session, we get a comfortable setting. People dress however they want. You want them to feel as free as they can feel and comfortable. It's fully inclusive, but not mandatory. Like, I remember the receptionist at our office said, "Can I come to the session?" And my VP of sales said, "Well, would the receptionist come to a planning session?" Turns out, we hired a temp for the day. The most brilliant idea of the day did not come from my VP of sales. It came from the receptionist who talks to all the irate customers and has to figure out what to do with them. And she had a brilliant idea for handling customer service when it goes bad. So it's fully inclusive. Clean slate. What a clean slate means is you're going to answer the question, if I started my department or my company over today, how would I design it? What would I build? Build it free. Now, the most important part is no gravity. I'm going to tell you what that means. No gravity means, I'm going to give you an example to illustrate it. No gravity means I want you to let the crazy fly. There's no rules, right? This is a wish. In a perfect world, this is what I would design. So let me give you an example. You can go ahead and do the next one. One day, we were waiting to do a blue sky session, and one of my guys was late. And I want to illustrate how these work. And I said, "Where were you?" And he said, "In the fast food line, but it took forever. Sorry I'm late." So I said, "You know what? Let's blue sky fast food for this one." So here's what I said. This is how the no gravity works. I said, if you were going to redesign fast food delivery from scratch with no gravity and no rules, what would you do? All right, go to the next one. I'll show you what my guy said. He turned to me and he said, "Jeff, you ever been to a concert or a football game where they fire T-shirts and cannons up to the stands?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Here's my no gravity version of fast food delivery. I'm driving down the road. I never stop. I never pull over. I text McDonald's an order. I open my window, and McDonald's employees are standing on the side of the street with a lunch cannon. They are firing lunch bags into cars' open windows as they drive by." That is no gravity. And let me tell you why we do it this way, and I'll tell you what came of that. If you look at your industry, let's say you've been in travel 20 years, and I tell you, do something innovative in travel. You know what you're going to do? You're going to stare at your existing business, the existing travel industry. And you know what you're going to create? Travel 21.0. And you know what's wrong with Travel 21.0? It has every bad decision you've ever made still in it. It has legacy technology. It has old infrastructure, old paradigms. So one choice is to look at your industry and say, how do I improve it, right? The other choice is, if you do that, you'll take your current business and you move it a little down the road. What I'm telling you to do is invent what you do from the beginning, starting over. So you're going to create this, lunch cannons, firing lunch. You can't build this. But you know what happens? If you start with this and move it forward, even if you hit 100%, you don't do much. If you start with this crazy idea and start dragging it back to reality, you wind up way ahead of where you're going to be. So let me tell you what happened out of that. We wound up literally launching a company out of the lunch cannon idea. So you know what's the first thing we did? We can't see you driving by with a lunch cannon, but it turns out maybe we can. So you know what we did? This is in test in parts of the country now. We put an electric eye in the drive-thru lane. It doesn't look like that. That thing creeps me out. I found it on the internet. I'm pretty sure when I move, it's following me. It's probably waiting in my room when I get up there later. It's an electric eye, and you know what it does? It watches cars, and when one comes in, it says, oh, that's Sarah. And it says Sarah because she's a soccer mom, which, guess what? That's the bulk of McDonald's business, is repeat customers. When you go to McDonald's in the morning to get coffee, you don't go to the one across town. You go to the one near you, and you get the same thing most every single day. That's their business. So the electric eye sees Sarah, and it says she comes every Tuesday and Thursday. Her daughter gets a happy meal with chicken and an orange soda. Her son gets a happy meal with a cheeseburger and no onions. So as she's pulling in, if she's getting her usual, guess what it does? She gets a message that says, we see you, we're preparing the order, you don't need to order. So we just got one step closer to the lunch cannon. You don't have to pull up, welcome to McDonald's, may I take your order? And you say, I'm the same lady that comes here every time, I order the same thing, do you not recognize me? Because they don't. But that thing does, right? Then we'd realize that as you go through that line, the next thing that takes so long is paying. So we say, look, Mrs. Johnson, you come here every Tuesday and Thursday. If you want, we can just swipe your credit card once, and every month we'll just hit you for whatever you bought that month. You don't have to pay anymore. So now she doesn't have to order and she doesn't have to pay. It's a separate lane, by the way. Then we said, hey, since you come here so much, we're going to offer you a Happy Meal subscription. If you want to buy a month in advance, we'll give them to you for $1.79, not $2.49. McDonald's gets a month's worth of money in advance, and she gets a discount on every single meal. So what happens now? As she's driving up, someone's holding a bag out the window. No pay, no stop, no ordering anymore. That's what we created out of a crazy idea to fire lunch out of a cannon. So I want you to try a blue sky session where you gather around every once in a while and just say, if we were starting this business over, what crazy ideas would we have? And somewhere, 99 of those, by the way, you'll laugh because they're silly. And the 100th one of those, you'll say, wait, what did you just say? And it will be brilliant. Let the crazy fly. I already gave you, I won't repeat this, but I already gave you on this next slide some of the things for you to look at, right, that you would design into your new business, from augmented reality, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, proactive engagement. By remote customer service and video chat, I just mean everybody's going to live chat. So I'm your customer. I'm on an educational travel trip. I'm standing somewhere in Rome, and I have a question. And on my device, when I hit help, you pop up live in a FaceTime, basically, and say, hey, how's the trip going? Or your customer service person. I'm talking to you live at the touch of a button. It works over the internet. It doesn't really cost anything, right? Remote service, things like that. So that's what I want you to do every once in a while. Start your business over from scratch. I think I have one more section here. I want to just talk quickly about customer intimacy here, the next slide. So customer intimacy is kind of the new model. And what that means is that so many people design, where do you design products? Where you work, right? In your office. And then you push them out to the world and hope customers like them. I learned a lesson I want to share with you real quickly here about the fact that most companies design their product from their office out. But the best companies design from the customer in, and I'm going to give you an example of that real quick here. I was on this TV show with these other CEOs, and the host said, when you have a good idea as a business owner, what do? And all the CEOs said, I get my team and we go in the conference room. And I said, I get my car keys and I go in the parking lot. And everyone said, what? I'm going to tell you guys the story. Go to the next slide. I was spending the afternoon with an elderly gentleman, okay? While I was talking to him, he built retail stores that were not supposed to work. All the experts said this idea will fail, it's suicide, and he did it anyway and it worked. So while he and I were spending the day together, I said, how did you know this would work? And he said, "Oh, Jeff, that's easy. A farmer in a John Deere hat told me." And I said, "What? Wall Street said it was a bad idea and a farmer told you it was good?" And he said, "Let me tell you the story." He said, "Jeff, this is my office." And he said, "These people are MBAs. They know supply chain logistics." I was like, "That sounds like good news, not bad news." You can go to the next slide. And he said, but then we're going to go backwards, just so you know. He said, "The problem is, these are my customers." He said, "My customers live across town in the diner. They wear work boots, John Deere hats, and they're eating apple pie all day." Go back to the previous one, please. I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "These people don't know." Now you can go back to that one and just hold that one. Don't switch for a minute. He said, "These," you guys didn't hear any of that. I said it in parentheses. "These people don't know these people, right? They don't live near them. They don't shop near them. They don't go to the same restaurants or stores." So the question was, how do you build product for somebody that you're not and that your employees are not that specific product? So I said, "What did you do?" He said, "Jeff, every other Friday," he said, well, what he said was, "I bought a John Deere hat." I said, "Then what?" He said, "Every other Friday, I would put on work boots, jeans, my John Deere hat, leave my office, drive across town, sit in the diner all day buying farmers apple pie." He said, "That's how I learned the business." So now I'll show you the punchline. That guy I spent the day with, his name was Sam Walton, and his store was Walmart. And I said, "Sam, everybody said you can't build big box retail in small town America. It will fail." And yet Walmart became the world's single largest retailer in the world. I said, "How did you know it would work?" And Sam said, "Because I hung out with farmers, not Wall Street people." So let me tell you what I do. Every other Friday, I change clothes, leave my office. I'll tell you what we did in the early Priceline days. We're trying to sell travel to people who are actually not my employees. Most of my employees then were developers, programmers, coders. But our customer was a leisure traveling. It was mom who planned the family trip. They were leisure travelers, and they were not frequent travelers at all. That was the original Priceline customer. So guess what we did? We would put on jeans. We would go to Walmart and Kmart at the time. We'd walk around with a cart pretending we were shopping and just chat with people. You're not wearing your logo. They don't know you're selling travel. You're just talking to people about, "What are you doing this weekend?" And somebody says, "Trying to go to my nephew's graduation, but we can't afford the hotel." And you say, "Really, what could you afford?" And you're in a conversation. Get out of your office and spend time wherever your customer is. If you're selling to college students, you should be dressed like one in jeans and a sweatshirt at some event just hanging out with students and listening to what they talk about all day. You can go to the next one. One of the things we do now is we put cardboard cutouts of our customer in our office. So the customer is in every meeting I'm in. The customer is sitting in the room with us. There's one of those in my office too. When my employees come in and say, "I got an idea," I say, "Tell it to Jane." And they look at her, and this is an unemployed housewife for that company. And they say, "She's not going to understand this." And I say, "Well, then I'm not interested, because Jane's the buyer. If you can't explain it to her, don't waste my time." You can go on. So what I want you to do is live a day in the life of your customer. Get out of your office in a non-sales mode and go hang out wherever your buyer is. Okay, this is the last piece. I'll do it fast. I didn't realize I had this piece. Go to the next one. The last thing I want to share with you is that really growing your business, the whole new focus of marketing these days is intent. People aren't really buying what you're selling. Let me explain what this means. Keep going, because I want to wrap up and be respectful of the time. Oh God, that's embarrassing. So back when I was in the music industry, I have a music company and a film company. We were on tour at the time with NSYNC. That's Justin Timberlake standing over my shoulder. You can go to the next slide. That's embarrassing. So we were on tour with NSYNC. They were the biggest band in the world right then. We were at a music store, the biggest music store in the world in Times Square, New York, where NSYNC was making an appearance. And I was watching all the customers. And the owners of the world's biggest music distributor flew in, because, again, NSYNC was big at that time. And I was looking at their business. And I'm going to ask you the same question I want you to go home and ask. And I said, "Why do people come to you? Why does anybody come to you? What do they want?" And he said, "Oh, they come here to buy CDs." And I said, "Actually, no, they don't." And he said, "What? We're the world's largest seller of CDs." And I said, "No one wants one." And he said, "Are you nuts, Jeff? That's what we sell. People look outside. They're in a giant line to buy NSYNC CDs right now." And I said, "No one wants a CD." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "No one wakes up in the morning and says, 'Geez, I wish I had a round piece of plastic with a hole in it.'" Right? No one wants a CD. And he said, "Then what do they want?" I said, "When they wake up in the morning, they're thinking this, 'Man, I want to hear that song.' They want to hear the song. They have to buy a CD." He said to me, you can go to the next one. He said, "What's the difference?" You already know the punchline of this one. The difference is, If you thought the music industry failed to invent the iPod, if you thought your job was to get a song in my ear as quickly as possible, you would have done this. If you thought your job was just to sell me a CD, you would have died like the music industry said. So now go to the next one. So I went back to my office, and I said, uh-oh. I said, guys, I want you all to do this. Ask the people that work with you, why do customers come to us? Why does anyone do business with us? My team said they come here to buy an airline ticket. I said, no, they don't. And they said, Jeff, we sell airline tickets. That's what everybody comes here for. I said, yeah, it turns out no one wants an airline ticket. And they're like, wait, we're selling really well right now. I said, no one wakes up in the morning thinking, I can't wait to go to security, go through the line, sit in the middle seat, get no food. No one wants an airline ticket. You can go to the next slide. What do they really want when they wake up in the morning? They just want to go to their sister's wedding. Nobody actually wants to fly all the way to Southeast Asia. What they want is a scrapbook of family memories they can laugh about for years. They have to fly really far to get that. But they didn't wake up saying, geez, let's go somewhere really far away that might even be dangerous or something. They're focused on family memories, let's say. Or they're focused on a cultural experience or a cuisine or whatever. So all reason I'm telling you this is when we changed our marketing, and not to say, if you want to book a trip, come here. What we said was, worried about going to your sister's wedding? We got you. We'll take care of that. Our sales went like that. So go to the last slide there. What I want you to do is think about, what is your customer really coming to you for? Because in no case did they want to pay for hotels and airline tickets. That's not what they woke up thinking. Geez, I got this money I want to get rid of. Get me an expensive hotel. What they were thinking is, geez, I got this family that works too hard. We never spend time together. We need to create a memory we'll be talking about forever. Find out what they're really thinking about and quit selling them. We were selling airline tickets and hotel rooms. No one wants those. They want weddings and graduations. I'm going to summarize now so we can quit here. I'll just say in summary that the world is moving fast. You've got to stay up on all these changes. I gave you, your customer is going to demand them. They're going to see all these technologies I showed you. I gave you info sponging as one of the techniques. Learn something new every day and be the first person in this room to apply it to our industry. Periodically reinvent yourself, start your business over, and just free think with no gravity, the t-shirt cannon example. And then lastly, customer intimacy. Change clothes, go. I was talking to an insurance agent one day, and I said, you need to put on shorts and tennis shoes, go to the park and attend a company picnic with families running around playing softball, and don't say the word insurance the whole time. It was amazing how he redesigned his business after he hung out with families. You can do the last one. I just put that up because I'll be with you guys the rest of today, but my email is just jeff@colorjar.com, the name of the company. Thank you guys very much for having me today.
So I'm sure we all want to thank Jeff for an amazing presentation, especially, let us not forget, on no sleep. So thank you again. It was really amazing. And I would say for those of you who are lucky enough to be travel planners, you have another opportunity to actually talk with Jeff in the next session in the Portland room starting at 10 o'clock. And for heads of companies and organizations, there is an invitation only opportunity to meet at 1:45 in Pershing Lindell. So two more opportunities that are structured. Thank you all for being here for this session. I want to again thank our sponsors, Lindblad, whose booth is 4B, and the Japan National Tourism Office, booth 4A, so please visit them when you have time. I would mention for travel planners who are going to Jeff's session now, it is at the other side, so you have to go back to the hotel space and go up to the mezzanine. And please, before you leave, fill in your evaluation form. You have about 15 minutes till next session start. Thanks very much. Thanks again, Jeff.